Dad, give me one of your Skittles.
Sure. Here, let me take one I want.
Okay, give me another one.
Here's another one.
Give me another one.
Here's another one.
Give me another one.
Here, take some more.
Another one.
Wait a minute, you were just pressing them into the chair. I have to pry those out.
Yes, I wanted to be nostalgic from when you used to work in the theater and that chick put all the Junior Mints on the seat.
Hey!
Courtesy Flashback Podcast.
Hi, I'm Paul Dini.
I'm Missy Lee. We're eating Skittles today.
Yeah,
everybody has them in their mouth.
Ration cookie.
Oh, except Emily. Emily, God.
Ow.
It was a program.
Eat
God. Eating them. Rashi out. Rashi's throwing his.
I know, he throws everything. Why are you surprised? It's just Skittles.
Every time we take him to the movies, he gets candy, the hardest candy he can get, and lobs it at everybody else.
Well,
and
just
me.
Be grateful he didn't get a box of Hammers to eat.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah, thank goodness for a small miracle.
There you go. A little gratitude every day.
Okay.
Guys, you got a busy week.
Yeah.
Y'all.
Yeah, it's going to be quite hectic.
You want to tell them what you're doing? Or is it a big secret?
No, it's not a big secret.
It's not a secret.
I don't know anymore.
It's Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, something really, well, it's next week.
Yeah. So,
well, it's the Friday after this podcast. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, something big is happening. You want to tell them?
We're getting married.
Hey! All right.
Yep.
Oh, damn.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Might as well.
Yeah. Might as well make me legal.
Oh. That's very sweet. Oh, congratulations. We're very excited for you.
And you're doing us the honor of standing over us, so that's going to be nice.
I will hover over you like
you're doing the ceremony.
Puppet marionette.
Yeah.
This is the second time I've seen
and
you
some
do
magic
a wedding
in it, too.
Ceremony.
We need to talk about colors.
Yes, yes. We
we'll do that tonight.
Talk, yeah.
So I can make sure it's all set. What?
This is the second time I've seen you perform a wedding ceremony.
I don't know. Are you invited to the wedding?
No, I'm not. Well, I was going to watch it on
YouTube.
I was going to watch.
Oh, my gosh.
I was going to watch it on YouTube later.
Oh, okay. Because I'll show it to you on YouTube.
I got to keep Rashi locked up at home.
He's
he's talked about throwing the wedding cake.
Well,
you know, like handfuls
just
of cake.
Give him a box of Hammers.
Okay. You're going to assault the guests.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Just point out the ones you don't want there.
Mm-hmm. That'll work. Most of my family can take it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They're crazy.
Mm-hmm. So are you excited?
Bride side, groom side. Everybody gets hit in the head with a hammer.
That's Punk. It.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was not excited about our wedding. I think I was pretty angry. The whole time.
You were a mess.
It is definitely getting more stressful the closer we're getting.
You were a mess, he said, going up.
I was just...
Did you hear what he said? You were a mess.
I was just like walking around in it. I was like zombie man. Like, what's happening?
I want that. Right. I'm waiting for that.
You know what? No, you... No, he suffered. He suffered for it for 10 damn years. I tell you what. The only thing he did in preparation for that wedding, he did two things. The day we got engaged, he drew our cake. And he said, this is what I want for a wedding cake.
Uh-huh.
And I found a guy to make it. And this is back before Ace of Cakes and Cake Boss and all this stuff. And we went to Mike's Amazing Cakes. Had to be flown in from Washington.
Oh,
picked up at the airport.
It was magnificent.
And brought, she said, because you know who got it done? I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he did? Bitched about how much the flowers cost. That's it. That was his contribution. He drew the wedding cake and he bitched about the flowers.
I hired the band.
No, you didn't. I hired the band.
I got too slim as bass.
You did do that.
I did that.
I hired the band, but you did get the bass for Too Slim because Riders in the Sky played at our wedding.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it's a, for those of you who don't know, it's an old, they're not old, but cowboy western swing band that sang Woody's Roundup. That's them.
Mm-hmm. Toy Story 2.
Yep.
What am I?
And they did the other one too. Was it You Got a Friend? No, that was Randy.
Randy Newman, but they sang the song. They won 2 Grammys because they did an album that tied in with Toy Story 2.
Oh, Jesse the Yodeling Cowgirl was them. That was it.
They did an album that tied in with Toy Story 2 and one that tied in with Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
And they both won Grammys for those albums.
Ranger Doug, fellow Michigander, went to Cranbrook Institute of Science. Well, not the science, Cranbrook Institute. Went to school at Cranbrook.
One of the best memories that I have of our wedding. And one of the best memories I have in my life, you know, top 10 moments of my life, was for the rehearsal dinner. What?
No, I'm just being
for the rehearsal dinner, we drove up to we had our rehearsal dinner at a at a barn on the Brazil Ranch near Big Sur. And Riders in the Sky was playing at the rehearsal dinner. We wanted to have a barn dance.
Not a rehearsal dinner. We had the reception before the
wedding. Well, the reception. Okay, well.
There's a difference. Rehearsal dinner is what we had at Hula's.
That's right.
When all the family showed up after we went to Hula's. We never really had a rehearsal. Hula's. We just kind of showed up, and Mr. Alex Ross's dad did our wedding, and he was like, "Okay, you guys are first, you guys are second. I'll just cue you." There was no rehearsal. Well, you don't really need. I mean, when you have smart people, you don't need. How many are in your wedding party?
Just us. Three.
Just the three of us.
Yep. That's what I was saying.
We don't need to practice anything except what you were talking about before.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go on with my moment.
We'll be fine. Yeah, I mean, just we'll just talk about what you want, and we'll walk through it. Because you need to feel comfortable knowing when to come in and who's going to play the music. And
yeah, I was more worried about timing. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be us and two people.
Right. So there's no idiots. So y'all are going to be just fine. We didn't have any idiots either. We had very smart people.
No, but I need to go back to my moment.
Back to your moment.
I have to put in a plug for Hula's on Lighthouse Avenue, Monterey, greatest tiki bar in the world.
You didn't have to do that.
I wanted to. All right. And try the ribs. They're great. But for the reception, which actually was the night, like you said, the night before the wedding.
Yep.
We drove up in full cowboy, cowboys.
Yeah.
Well, most cowboys are cowboys, I guess.
Cowgoyum.
Yeah, cowgoyum. Yeah. We showed up in full cowboy and cowgirl regalia at the barn. We drove up in our Jeep, and we walked in, and Riders in the Sky was playing Miss Molly, the Bob Wills tune Miss Molly, as Miss Misty, which they had written the words to. And it reminded me more than anything of a scene from a Roy Rogers picture or a Gene Autry picture where the cowboy hero makes an entrance someplace and the band is already playing. Like in Roy Rogers, it would be like the Sons of the Pioneers. So Roy and Dale, you know, ride into the barn and the band is already there and they're playing, because every one of the Roy and Gene Autry movies would have like four or five musical numbers. And like over a period of like an hour and 10 minutes, however long those movies were. So that was like, suddenly we walk into a real life Republic movie. And that was great, because we're just sitting there watching the band afterwards. Like, hey, Paul, hey, Misty. Hi, Ranger Doug. It was great. It was a magic moment.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that
and then the mountain lion had been
the mountain lion eating
murdering
the,
animals and the dragging calf it right in front of where we had the...
Well, it's leaving you a present.
Well, the florist had to clear it away. The florist had to drag it off into a place where no one would see it, because everyone was about to arrive. And the cat was like, I too have a gift for the princess, and dragged a friggin' carcass.
And the florist was like, this isn't my job.
Yeah. And the owner of the Brazil ranch was like, he's actually leaving gifts of gratitude. You know, like how cats kill for you because they think you're a bad murderer. So, that you know, she was like, this is actually a present for you guys.
Well, thank you, Sher Khan. Drag it over there next to the toaster, will you?
Exactly. You. And so they were saying, because the cat's doing this, you've got to watch the small children at your wedding.
Yeah, I did run out after Clint Dilly, and I said, get Zane away from the duck pond, because I think the cat likes to hide in the rushes and ambush the ducks and stuff.
Also, we just put a crocodile in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it was really weird. There was like blood everywhere. It was bizarre.
Wow. Yeah.
So many things.
It's always nice having a major predator coming to your...
Yeah, people had to go get it. It was something. Yeah, a gift from a predator.
I don't like the Skittles that are green apple as much as I like them when they're lime.
I like them lime too. I was just lamenting that same thing.
Yeah, she was trying to pawn off all our green apple ones.
I know.
I was disgusted.
Yeah. I guess the chemical for making artificial green.
Well, limes are. There's a rush on limes this year.
Oh, that would.
I don't think it's why they're doing this. I think they're doing this because kids don't like lime.
I always heard the apple was bad for you or something too. So I don't know.
I'm sure it's all bad for you.
Yeah, right. It's not good.
I'm
for
pretty
you
sure.
At all.
I was just reading a very simple thing. It said, "Are you eating healthy? If your food goes bad, you are. If your food does not, you're not." And I went, "Oh, okay."
My food goes bad all the time.
My food starts bad, so we're good.
Although if you bring home fresh Twinkies and like a day later, they're rotten. It's
you got to leave them in the package. There's something magical about that packaging that keeps them good forever.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite candy or junk food?
Oh,
it's different when it's not candy.
Yeah.
Hey now.
Jeez, that's a tough one. I guess it would have to be like Dorito chips.
Yeah.
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 I just have an addiction for those.
Yeah.
Especially the sweet and chili lime ones or whatever. That, that's
really
good.
Now you lost me.
Oh, well, there's the one with a touch of lime. Those are good.
No, not the one.
No, those are Tostitos.
Spicy, sweet,
chili.
He
said Doritos. This is a flavor you've not had.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I like chips fine, okay, but I can pass them up all the time.
I really like the word chips.
As a conveyance system for salsa, salsa is what I make dirty too.
There you go.
And I can eat an entire jar of salsa.
Salsa, mole.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't like French fries very much. You know, if somebody has French fries, I'll always pass them up, but I'll have them if I'm in a mood for ketchup. You know, I like the sauce.
Yeah, well, they're a carrier device.
Yeah.
I've always said that.
Yeah. Mm. Your favorite candy, one of your favorite candies is...
It's in the cupboard. I'm going to go get one.
Is Lick-A-Made, but not...
I don't like the powder,
but not the Lick-A-Made, not the powder.
You like the sticks. See, nobody
you like
else
the conveyance
likes the
device.
I like the stick too.
Oh, well.
I just bought a whole box of Lick-A-Mades on Amazon, and I threw the powder away.
What?
No,
all
no,
there's just the powder.
I have so if that's good for me to know, because if I ever do it again, I'll give you all my powders.
Okay.
But I have some. If you want some cherry Lick-A-Made, I have some. I'll get you some right now. Well, in a minute. And then I cut out of like 20 of them. I just cut sticks out and put them in a sack, and then I threw them in the car. And when I get nervous, because there's no fat in them. I mean, there's tons of sugar, so you want to eat a ton of them. But if you're, you know, like when I'm in traffic or whatever, and I'm like, or I feel my blood sugar's low, I and I'll just eat a Lick-A-Made stick. Delicious. Delicious.
I just put together my candy bouquet.
Yep, she is a candy.
Your bouquet is candy?
Yeah.
Mine was a masquerade mask. What kind of candy's in it?
Let's see, I got those little, it's all red and purple.
Okay.
And it's...
So, Mike and Ike's? Did you put red Mike and Ike's in there? They sell only red now.
I couldn't figure out how to get those on the stick, but I have...
Okay.
Yeah, because it's in a bouquet.
I have those Twizzlers.
Right, hot glue gun. Huh?
Twizzlers?
Yes.
Rock
those
candy.
Rock candy, the purple and red.
Oh, so it's actually open candy, like available to be ate as you're walking down the aisle.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking it was in the boxes.
Nope. She's in the candy fix while she's going.
Are you going to lick it the whole time we're working on the wedding?
No.
Can I? I'll hold it for you. You pass it to me, I'll hang on to it. I'll hang on to it real nice.
My friend who's doing the photography was asking about throwing the bouquet, and I'm like, I'm not throwing that.
Yeah, no.
I'm eating
that. No, I'm eating
there's
that.
There's not going to be enough left.
No. Are you going to get a fake one and throw it? Because you can get like a $5 one at Michael's. I'll pick it up for you if you want. Like red roses, like a little fake. I had some here, but I returned them.
It's not like I'm doing anything traditional anyway.
That's true. You guys are really unique and having fun with it.
Yeah.
Even your rings are different.
Yeah.
Is Carrie Fisher going to be at your bachelor party?
So what?
Carrie Fisher going to be at your bachelor party?
No, she's not, unfortunately. Unless you can work something out.
Go she's off making the new Star Wars movie.
I know. Get me to England and we'll do it.
You have to fly her in.
What a braggart. Here, let me pick this name up off the floor. You dropped it.
Carrie Fisher, thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Put that back in your pocket.
I didn't even have a bachelor party, so you lucked out there.
No, he didn't.
Did I?
He suffered for it. He suffered for that, too.
Really?
He came home covered in kisses. He was in trouble.
It was like,
I was pissed.
Never heard that side of the story.
Because I don't normally tell it because I come off like a bitch. But it was Bill Morrison came home and he was like, I know it looks bad, but it was totally G-rated. And I'm like, was it now? And he goes, well, kind of. And I was like, no, you know what? Stop talking. Bill, you need to leave. And Bill was like, Bill looked at Paul and nodded and he goes, I need to leave. Like, I'm really sorry. And then the tornado.
My attitude was,
house.
Don't leave, Bonnie. Yeah. Don't leave. Wilma's got a rock and she's going to beat my head in. Bonnie, you can't.
Dying.
No.
I was mad.
In that moment, I was Fred Flintstone, Oliver Hardy, Ralph Cramden, anybody who's ever gotten it. You know, any pathetic TV husband who's ever gotten
it. Tom the Cat, all of it.
What's that?
I said Tom the Cat, all of it.
Tom the Cat. Oh, yeah. It was like,
Yep. Nice. Yep. You were in trouble.
I was in bad trouble.
And you know what's funny is if you had that bachelor party today, I would not care.
Oh, yes, you would.
Oh, really?
Oh, hey, don't say anymore.
No, you wouldn't. I don't know. It's just like, it's like a night I want to just block from
I need
memory.
To go now, Paul.
He's going to get a chalk outline for his anniversary gift.
Doesn't work twice, I guess.
Didn't work once.
No, it didn't.
Nope,
it didn't
really stop. Work. Right where you are. 10 years. See, shit just... Women have a mental file cabinet, and we can remember shit that pisses us off, and it's like, we have this Rolodex. Ding! Remember that? Remember?
No, I don't!
I do!
Let me refresh your memory.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
I remember it was cold on the couch. Good.
That's a start.
Yeah. 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 What were you going to talk about?
What was I going to talk about? Where?
We were in there, and I was going to... Oh, Black Canary and Zatanna.
Oh, well, I was going to talk originally about...
That's out this week. 10 on Amazon Graphic Novels.
Fantastic.
Wall Street... No.
Yeah, it's in the top 10. It
top
is number 10.
Of the New York Times.
Top 10 of the New York Times.
What is that test? The
Bechdel test?
Bechdel test. Yeah.
Well, passed on that. Yeah.
Passed it.
But I told my mom today that we were number 10, we entered at number 10 on the 10 best hardcover graphic novels.
Why weren't you number 9? No, I'm kidding.
I don't know, because we just got up. That was actually the week before when we were just in comic book stores.
Oh, okay.
Because as I understand it, they released us first to comic book stores, and then the following, that was on the 21st or the 22nd of May, on the 27th, they released us to Amazon and Comixology and a bunch of other places. So it's my understanding that we got on for that first week when we were just selling in the comic stores. And now that we seem to be doing well on Amazon and Comixology.
Oh, look at those. Missy just pulled out.
Look at those. Those are like sugar-coated tongue depressors.
They are like sugar-coated tongue. Oh, they're all sugar. Sugar-created tongue depressors. And I was wrong. I think there's probably about 40 of them in there.
Wow.
Wow.
So I got that going for me.
Yep.
Mm, they're delicious, too. They're vanilla. Mm. Okay, so I was going to ask you a bunch of questions.
And the reviews were very good, too.
Nice. Of course they were. The book is good.
It's a very good story about female friendship and empowerment and just a lot of stuff. Unlike the movie Maleficent, which aspires to be those things.
Bombing, I hear, but
no, it hasn't. It made a fortune.
Okay,
it made a fortune, and people like it. People love it, or they run hard or cold.
Mm. You know, let me ask you guys something. Paul and I were talking about this earlier this week.
Yeah,
our generation, like in the past 10 years, 15.
All right,
in the past 15 years, we've seen our really good villains, Darth Vader, Maleficent, and a couple other ones, have been changed from true villains and just black evil. Which was awesome.
Into
anti-heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
Anti-heroes who are just misunderstood with a bad background, and you know they turned evil, but everyone is really good. I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
I like my evil cold.
Yeah.
I don't like
black.
This mashed potato bullshit that they're doing. They should have left Darth Vader alone. I do not like him better. Now that I know his quote-unquote backstory.
Well, telling backstories never helps.
And I'm just kind of like, huh. And I wonder what's going to happen, because kids are growing up now with no real evil villain. There's no real stark delineation. Like when we were little, there was, I mean, way back even before that, there was Skeletor, who was bad.
Yeah.
And He-Man, who was good. Skeletor didn't really have a lot of misunderstood moments and some bullshit backstory that we all just kind of had to feel sorry for him.
He was just an evil dude. He was a skeleton-faced evil dude.
Red Skull. Yeah. Nothing to love there. No.
Maybe they all got made fun of for being skulls.
Dr. Doom. Mm. A little more sympathetic, but that was Kirby who did that to him, you know. Stanley and Jack, I think, have the right to go to a place like that. And even then, they showed why he became evil. It's not like he's a nice guy. There, it's one thing to do a story about somebody who starts off and then turns to evil and then becomes a monster, like Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dracula was not that great a guy to begin with, Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you don't get that name by returning phone calls and sending flowers.
It's not because he made great s'mores, you know, over the fire. Hey, look at that, impaled that marshmallow, really nice.
He made really good barbecue skewers. I mean, he did, but not of fruits and veggies.
No. But then when he becomes Dracula, he becomes a monster. Now, he's a charming monster. In moments, some even find him attractive and sexy, but make no mistake, he wants blood, and he is
above
a creature.
Above all else.
Yeah, he's a creature.
Mm-hmm.
There is a weird romance to him. That Lugosi always said there was a weird romance to him, and there might be a little bit of that to him, but, you know,
I'm okay with there being charm and humanity.
Yes.
And I'm also okay if a character is not compelling.
Uh-huh.
I.e. Mr. Freeze and what you did with him in Heart of Ice.
Yes.
Okay? I'm okay if the origin story of their evil makes them better.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if the character is three-dimensional and already fleshed out,
mm-hmm.
I think it's horrible. I would go watch a movie from Maleficent's perspective where she's pissed and her minions are screwing up, and you see what happened on the, in the cartoon where you didn't see her. Mm-hmm. You know, like the stuff that's going on in her castle and what are her day-to-day, like, oh God, moments and stuff like that. I would go and watch that movie. But going and finding out that, spoiler alert, guys, I haven't even seen the movie. You can find all this stuff out online. That mm-hmm. they cut her wings off. That
I think
sucks.
That's in the trailer, too.
Yeah,
yeah it is.
I had wings once. They were stolen from me.
But for a great story about female empowerment and camaraderie, there's Black Canary in Zatanna,
right.
Bloodsport.
And it's not suffering, and people are saying, wow, this is really fun. It's a fun, light read. It's really great. Yeah. These girls are powerful. We're watching them pal around. This is the original characters. It's not New 52 stuff, so it doesn't really fall into continuity. It's like a couple days in the life of.
Well,
and they're independent, and they're smart, and they handle it alone. They don't need to call in Batman, Green Arrow, Superman, anybody. They just take care of business.
And yet,
like they would.
And yet, that's fine. And that's exactly what I set out to do. And that's what Joe captured. Quinones captured in the artwork and everything.
He did a nice job.
He did a beautiful
Joe.
Job.
He's up for an award, right?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe. He should be.
And yet, it doesn't quite... It's the stuff that people really get upset about. That really... Like, Identity Crisis. People were livid over that, over what happened in that. And my books, you don't get livid over. You just enjoy them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's. But on the other hand, I think that's
so
not...
So your argument is that there is a place in the marketplace for event shockers.
Yes, because...
There's not necessarily a place for them in your book.
No.
You're just trying to tell a good
story. Yeah, that's right. But
I understand.
Because you need a place to go. I mean, if you do a story where your most treasured, sympathetic, favorite character dies horribly, you need to know, you need to feel, why do I like that character to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, Batman can't, you know, he can't be Mr. Grim and Gritty all the time, or else he becomes what he's fighting. Mm-hmm. He just becomes more heavy on top of more heavy. If you don't have a hero who has occasional light moments, Batman doesn't have many of them, but a character like The Flash or Aquaman or Superman even, if they're not setting by shining example, you've got no pedestal to pull them down from. You've got nothing... A shocking story doesn't really work if you're just going from shock to shock.
Yeah.
The character, I mean, Killing Joke's a good example. When Barbara Gordon opens that door and gets shot in the spine by the Joker, I mean, I'm sure that thing did a lot to fans. It's like, you can't do that to Barbara Gordon. You can't do that to happy, perky little Batgirl. You can't put Batgirl in a wheelchair forever. That is just too tragic and too sad. And even though people, I remember at the time, they hated that and they wanted it stripped from continuity,
it became more continuity later.
It sold the books, and it made everybody want to check that out. So,
but you're right. You can't have that kind of story without having all those years of Batman where it was this fun and you know, where you're rooting for these people and enjoying their lives.
Yeah. So in Black Canary Zatanna 2, they both get fed to sharks.
Okay.
Yeah, there they go.
So, wow.
A spoiler alert. Little preview. They both get fed to sharks.
And, yeah.
No, they don't. You give me such a shock look. What? I'm just being kidding. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Okay, what else did we see? We saw Godzilla. We liked that.
Godzilla. Yeah,
Godzilla was good.
You loved it too? Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Who was I talking to this weekend? And I said, did you like it? And he goes, yes. And I said, you're saying that because I did. You hated it. You're loud. And he was like, I did hate it. And I said, you can hate it.
Why did they hate it?
I mean, the main actor wasn't very well developed, but everyone around him was. And
it's a Godzilla movie.
Godzilla's
the main actor.
And it worked for what it was.
You know what? Any movie where a monster tears open another monster and spits fire down its neck is a win.
Yes.
I don't care if there's
a
script at all.
No, you're right. You're completely right.
They can eat alphabet soup and poop out the script, and I will go watch it. If there is a monster spitting fire, especially if that monster is a flying cockroach, which we all know I hate.
Yes.
They should do that for the next Muppet movie.
Flying cockroach?
No, have the Muppets
have
go berserk and
spit
fire down. Yeah, nice. Kermit spits fire down Piggy's
and then they put an apple in her mouth and everybody eats her.
Oh, something like that. Something
and
with a little
she
more.
Makes us happy each time we eat her.
Yeah, there we go.
She'll be the reason our plates are full. Right?
Nice. Yeah, there you go.
Wow,
there you go.
That was good.
Musical improv, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. Something like that. Yeah, the Muppets need to step it up a little bit for the next movie. The last one wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as the
first one. It was fine.
It's fine.
We discussed it on here already.
Yeah, we did. What else is coming? The Seth MacFarlane movie we didn't see.
Yeah.
I you know what? The only review that I've seen of it from anyone I know, only one person I know saw it, and her review was, what is it, A Million and One Ways? Is that what it is?
A Million Ways to Die in
the West. A Million Ways to Die in the West. Any of them would have been better than having to sit through that movie, she said. Yeah. And I went, wow.
Once I saw the Doc Brown cameo in the commercial, I went, okay.
Oh, man.
That's Family Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised when I first saw a commercial how much they're not going into this, selling it at all. They're just, hey, it's in the West, quote unquote.
Yeah. I mean, it takes guts and know-how to make a Western now. And with Westerns, you could wind up in the same boat of what I was talking about nice little entertainment that people ignore because, you know, everybody's seen Westerns. And how do you make a Western that really captivates people? I mean, I think you need, that's the one genre you really need, like an interesting star in the star role, like whoever it is. And then you need like a story that is really, really compelling. And, they're hard to do these days.
Well, even like they're trying for a comedy. They're trying for Blazing Saddles, and Blazing Saddles took themselves seriously delivering the comedy, and I think these guys aren't.
From what I've seen, I'd agree with you on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with Lone Ranger wasn't the hero of the movie. It was Tonto doing wacky shit. And
yeah,
the Lone Ranger was like, I have a problem with any movie that takes an established hero that is against being that hero for the first 90 minutes of the movie, and then the last 5 minutes becomes that character. That was a problem with the Lone Ranger, and that was a problem 30-odd years ago when Robin Williams did Popeye. I remember, you know, when I was in college, I was going like, Robin Williams is Popeye. That'll be kind of fun. I'm looking forward to that. And it's like he was in total denial of who Popeye was up until the very end when he had a fight underwater and gave Bluto one punch and fought an octopus, you know, that looked like a hunk of plastic.
Yeah.
And then it's like, wait a minute, he's not Popeye at any point in this. I waited 90 minutes to see this. Why? So I can sit through Popeye 2. It'll probably stink also. Lone Ranger, here it was like, I'm in denial of being the Lone Ranger. I'm in denial of all these things. I wanted to see him like from the get-go just doing Lone Ranger stuff.
You wanted to open with that. Da-da-dun, da-da-dun, and not end with that.
Yeah. I didn't want to open in the 30s with some kid watching, you know, 1,000-year-old Tonto acting wacky. I wanted to, even though that scene was kind of cool and interesting and everything, it was at war with what the Lone Ranger is. And the Lone Ranger is it's a hard character to screw up. I mean, you really got to work to... I don't like movies that take a well-known character and then are in denial of it. That would be like making a Tarzan movie, he hates the jungle and everything, and then he gets stranded in the jungle, and he has to learn how to become Tarzan. No, I want to see a safari about to get killed and wiped out, and Tarzan swing in and save everybody, because, hey, it's Tarzan.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Go in with the action, catch us up as we go.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
We need to be caught up.
Yeah,
because if you tell a compelling story about a good character, people will seek out their origin. Yeah. They will want to know more. Now, it's like, you know what? Anton LaVey, God, here I go. But Anton LaVey, in his book, The Satanic Witch, talks about, and for those of you who don't know who Anton LaVey is, he's the father of modern Satanism. And I just kind of laugh and shrug it off. Let's quote him. But in his book, The Satanic Witch, he actually makes a really valid point, which does not involve me spilling Pellegrino all over my dress, although that's already done. So he says, if you are in a strip club and there is a completely nude, and to men, I suppose women would be intrigued by this too. There's a completely nude woman standing next to you, but the woman to your side is in a button-down shirt and is just missing one button and is really self-conscious of it and is trying to keep it closed. Guess what's the most interesting thing in the room? There's no mystery with a naked lady standing right there. We know. There's nothing to uncover. Mm-hmm. That's why strippers are... That's why they're popular, because they're uncovering piece by piece. They're enticing, revealing, and sometimes they... Instant gratification, you know, it's full, there it is. Sometimes, like in burlesque, they're creative and they hide it, and it's the tease. Mm-hmm. If there's no tease, there's no interest. And if you tell a really compelling story about a long-standing character and you give people a tease, you strip them just a little bit. They don't need to be completely naked. You undo one button, the people will go and seek out the rest because they're going to want to know more about the character. And if you don't blow through their whole history, then you've got all that much more material to cover later.
Yeah, because if you had done the Lone Ranger with him, an act of heroism with him and Tonto at the beginning, 30 minutes of establishing, you know, some problem that they're settling, putting them in action, their relationship, their friendship. At the end of the first 20 minutes or so, the Lone Ranger finds a clue, like they used watch imagery. Like if he found that watch and it was engraved and suddenly he had a reaction to it. And, you know, then later that night, they're sitting there and he's looking at the watch and it's like, "You quiet tonight, Kemosabe? What the matter?" "Well, I found this watch. It's engraved to Butch Cavendish. He's the guy who killed my brother." "Oh, you know, we thought he dead." "No, he's back, Tonto." Then suddenly you get the idea of, okay, I found this. I'm quiet tonight because the man who killed my brother comes back. That could trigger a flashback or something. But it's like you don't need to, you know, rehash everything because pretty much everybody going in knows this stuff. And the audience, and if we're led to believe what Hollywood tells us about audiences, the audience wants, you know, the big kickoff. They want to be engaged early on. They don't want to sit through a long, torturous origin story.
Right.
And yet they do.
But they do it every time, and they treat us like we're idiots, like the audience members. Like, we can't just appreciate a story for story's sake. And my question then becomes, is it that they think we're stupid or that they're not capable of telling a story for story's sake? You know, and I think that the Avengers was actually, I mean, yes, they did go and do the origins, but when they finally all came together, they didn't really belabor us with, "And this is Captain America, and this is what he did, and this is so-and-so, and this is what she did." You got to see that stuff if you want to go see how Captain America got his, you know, origin. But the Avengers just goes.
Yeah.
And that's good. We don't need to see, you know, like, they cover Loki, and they cover, I'm talking about one. You know, they cover Loki and Thor, and it's touched on. But if you want to know, you got to go find out.
Yeah.
You know, what's the deal with this cube thing? People in the know go, "Oh, dang." Two sentences and it's over. Because a good story can be summarized in two sentences. What is this? "Oh, it's all powerful stuff and it's really going to be tough to contain. We don't have anything on earth that can handle this." Yeah. Good to know. We're going to have to call a god. Well, we have one. Cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's done. Yeah. We don't need all 20 issues of the cube continuity.
No.
Stop it. Tell me a good story, you know?
No, and
then, why am I telling Paul Dini about how to write a story? You know.
Well, that's the thing. It's just I don't know. And getting back to your original question about villains, or your original point about villains.
Yeah.
A lot of this is plain and simple money. I mean, you look at it. Yeah. You know, you look at the. I'm not saying this is exactly the way it goes, but if you look at a company like Disney, they really want to take you cradle to grave, selling you stuff at every phase of your life. And if you bought it once, you'll buy it again. For instance, you start off kids, for like just born kids, with baby Mickey and Winnie the Pooh. And you keep them around Mickey Mouse, Winnie the Pooh, some of their lighter TV stuff for about a year or two. Then right there is a complete and permanent split. Boys this way, girls this way. And the girl path leads to princesses.
Sophia the First.
First fairy, yeah.
Doc McStuffins,
and then Tinkerbell, and then princesses, and then once you, and this is all at a certain age, you know. So the littlest girls will like the fairies. Then they're into the princesses, and then they get to be about 9, 10, and oh, I'm so over that. They want to be, you know, rebellious. So then you get a little bit of like the Disney Channel heroines, and then you get Maleficent. You know, it's like. And you want to cash in on that goth girl, the rising goth girl attitude. So she can't be a monster. She has to be somebody that you were going to want to buy the purple lipstick for and the Maleficent Halloween costume and buy into what she is. But the key word here is buy. And the boys, on the other hand, have gone from Mickey Mouse to cars
to
pirates to, you know, at one point it was like Davy Crockett. But they can't do Davy Crockett now because that's not very PC. Because that would mean taking a rifle and being a pioneer and shooting stuff. So it's superheroes. So that's, you know, so
then they go into Marvel. And that's the Marvel stuff. They bought Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah. And
they
then
were like, "We got princesses. We've got this. We need something for Marvel's got boy stuff kind of sewn up." And then they go into Star Wars either at the same time or you know, one after the other.
Yeah, so, but we are never letting you out of our sight as a consumer. And we will change everything to, you know, to get you to retain your dollar, which makes, you know, so it's like, where are our villains coming from? You know, who can be villains? The only villain you can, everybody can agree on are like secondary villains, like the guy in the Pirates of the Caribbean film, you know, the sleazy white British naval officer who's trying to take advantage of Captain Jack Sparrow, you know, because he's out for profit and serving the government. And so we can blow him up, but you're not going to blow up Jack Sparrow, and you're not going to blow up any pirate that matters. And right, maybe mean, Blackbeard's kind of a villain. But
yeah, and I don't know what they've done with someone like Ursula the Sea Witch. She was just bad. Just yeah. bad and nasty. They ran into her with the mast of a ship. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's slay the dragon, which is essentially what they did with her.
Also,
they
she's fat.
Killed Maleficent. Also, she's what?
She's fat.
Well, then.
So that, you know, fat people are inherently evil unless they're Santa Claus.
That's not nice.
No, but it's, you know, that's striking against her, whereas Maleficent is angular and beautiful looking. So
I guess that's true, albeit green.
Oh, yeah. But,
he's being green.
Yeah, all right, Shere Khan. You know, yeah. he's evil.
You've been on a Shere Khan kick.
Well, I like Shere Khan.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't necessarily want to see him, you know, turn good, even though you look at the Jungle Book, he's got a point. Man comes into the jungle and with fire and with guns and destroys, you know, is and it's like, okay, in my lifetime, I've seen the wild tigers diminish from about 10,000 to what, 3,500 in India. There are now more live tigers in captivity around the world. And in India, they're being crowded out everywhere, you know, and so Shere Khan has a point, although it's like killing people is not, you know, and eating them is not necessarily a valid point, but he's cool. He's a cool looking character. I personally would rather have more Shere Khan at Disneyland and much less Tigger, but that's me. But again, I don't want to see him in his own movie, and I don't want to see him become a good guy and everything. There's something, you know, cool about him. You know, Scar is cool. I mean, but they're the villain, the characters you love to hate. You can only do them so much before they're not villains anymore. And,
yeah.
And you know, some of the others. It's like so they're colorful characters, but when there's a little too much sympathy for the devil, then it's, you know, you lose that appeal. Like I never wanted to do when I did the animated series, I never wanted to do an origin story for the Joker that would show him as sympathetic.
Right.
Because yeah. that loses his essence.
In fact, that was my favorite part of the Dark Knight Returns was him telling the Joker story. And I was like, oh, no, they're going to tell his story. And then he changed it. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I want it to be completely ambivalent.
Right. 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 Well, that was the thing with, you know, in even in The Killing Joke, he says, if I have an origin, I prefer to be multiple choice.
And, yeah.
And that was the way, you know, I wrote origin stories about him. I did a really good one with Alex Ross. I think I like that one. And that's one of my favorites that we ever did, which was interviews with various street thugs who knew the Joker back when. And even then, they knew him as sort of like a shadowy character. Nobody was really sure what his actual name was and everything. And it's like, that doesn't say that the Alan Moore origin of him couldn't exist. Mm-hmm. I just didn't choose to deal with it in that.
Yeah.
You know, because I've always thought of the Joker as a pretty much a career criminal. Just a, you know, a thug who, a master manipulator.
He had nasty proclivities and then they just exaggerated themselves and made him nastier as
yeah.
he got older.
But,
that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good villain to me. And their whole, you know, like you made a good point, and we've discussed this on here before about the difference between a three-dimensional villain and a two-dimensional villain. Really. You know, like a mustache twisting, you must pay the rent. Versus a, you know, yeah, versus a, listen, you guys are wrong. Every single badger in the world must die. Because this is my perspective, and they gotta go. And I have a valid reason in my own little crazy effed up world that all badgers must die. And then the hero comes in and goes, but you can't kill the badgers. The badgers are part of a huge ecosystem. And we need to save them. And I'm making this up. I just picked the first thing I thought of. You know, but
we don't need no stinking badgers.
Right, there we go. You know, but you guys are looking at me like, what story is that? That's not one. You know, but the whole point is, the villain's perspective is, no, this just has to happen. And they believe in it so strongly that they think they're the hero. If you tell the story from the other side, they are. That's a compelling villain. And it's not, you know, it's not they're setting out to do evil. Mm-hmm. They're setting out to get something done that they mm-hmm. feel with their heart of hearts that it needs to be freaking done. And the hero disagrees. And that's it. That's a good villain. I don't need to see that the person turned against Badgers after one killed his mother. No! Mm. I don't care.
Well, it's not to say that you can't do a compelling character who has the villain role, or the antagonist role, I guess that's it. And then you have a different point of view at the end, and you don't have to, you know, kill them necessarily or reform them totally, but I always liked the hunter in The Fox and the Hound because I thought he was a very good villain in the fact that he was designed to look looser and a bit more cartoonier. You know, he's an irascible old man, you know. On the con side, he shoots anything he can get in his gun sights. He's a hunter by nature, by trade, and probably and a trapper also. So there's that against him. Two, he's a crotchety old fart who, you know, drinks corn liquor and swears at everybody. Three, but on the pro side, he takes care of his dogs. He likes his dogs an awful lot and sees to their needs. When one of them is badly injured, he presumably took it to the vet and had its leg fixed. And, you know, he is loyal and he's not without heart at the end. Mm-hmm. But he's still kind of a complex character because he's still kind of, you know, crotchety and awful, but maybe not as awful as he was at the beginning. It's not, I would rather have a character like that who has some sort of depth to him than, you know, the Horned King in the Black Cauldron, which was made around the same time. Mm-hmm. He's just a stock villain. You know, he's scary. He's like Darth Vader before Vader was reformed. He's just a guy who wants to raise the dead and do his bidding. And I find him a worse villain because there's nothing really compelling about him. Maleficent has style. It's easy to see that she's got some deep-seated anger mm-hmm. against the kingdom, or else she wouldn't bother coming mm-hmm. and making such a big deal. But the Horned King, I want to raise an army of zombies and take over the world, and that's it. You don't really care about him other than the fact that he's kind of scary.
Well, or for example, another good villain is if we were invaded by giant ants and all they wanted to do was eat people, and what is our problem?
Yeah.
They're bigger than we are, therefore they're superior, and we just need to be food.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be food. So, for us, the hero on our side is the let's kill the ants. The hero on their side is let's kill these people. They're assholes. We need to eat them. Mm-hmm. You know, like a foreign race, you know, that or another species.
It was that Clint Eastwood movie. It was the San Diego and Flags of Our Father. It was the war from two different sides. The Chinese and our side.
There you go.
It's exactly that. It's like we are their villains and they are our villains mm-hmm. at that point.
Oh, let me pose a question. Who is the bigger villain? Buffalo Bill or Hannibal Lecter?
Oh, interesting.
Who is the bigger villain, would you say?
Well, I'm a huge Hannibal fan, so.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar enough with Buffalo Bill to answer that question.
Well, he's a guy, you know, it puts a lotion on her skin or she gets a hose again.
Oh, in that, I thought you meant like Buffalo Bill, like Wild Bill Cody.
What do you mean, like Howdy Doody?
And I'm going, yeah.
Come
I'm
on,
going,
Howdy.
I'm going like, what did he do?
He killed a bunch of buffaloes. That's not cool.
Well, that's what I thought. Like, I really did think like the Howdy Doody guy, malice. And I'm going, what did that guy do? But the first one I thought of was Wild Bill Cody, and I'm like, all he did was travel around and do a cowboy show.
No, that was the guy's name. Buffalo Bill was the mm-hmm. was the
weird. Well, yes, no, you're right. He was the murderer in Silence of the Lambs.
So who is the bigger villain and why?
Well,
the essay.
Well, that's totally subjective because they're both committing murder.
Yeah.
And they're both, you know, so I would say that they're probably both villains and an equal thing, but whose crimes do I like better? I mean, like, I don't really know how else to answer that question. And of course, Hannibal's, because he's judicious and he's more like the Punisher. Whereas Wild Bill is just like a wild animal and he tortures to torture. Hannibal Lecter kills quickly, judiciously, and on purpose. And then he enjoys eating them.
And to a certain fact, he was even manipulating that situation. So I think it's Hannibal at that point. Yeah,
you think Hannibal's worse or Bill?
Yeah, Hannibal's worse. Cause,
oh, no, I disagree. I think Bill is worse because he's a torturing monster.
Well, I just figure the fact that Hannibal has forethought and, you know, there's cold-bloodedness to that, whereas mm-hmm. Buffalo Bill seems like more an emotional reaction or like just an instinct.
Also a valid point, but I was answering it from the perspective of whose crimes do I like better.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and I think Hannibal's gut style, you know. Is he more insidious and cold-hearted? Oh, I would have to say probably. Is he more dangerous? Definitely.
Yeah.
Even though Hannibal? Wild, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a better monster. For sure.
Well, again, you know, using Shere Khan as the example, it's the difference between Shere Khan and a mad dog,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mm-hmm. and there's also Buffalo Bill has a complete denial. At least Lecter looks his victims in the face and treats them like people. Buffalo Bill only refers to his victims as it, you know, and dehumanizes them, where at least Lecter can, you know, treat them like people until he...
Again, goes towards my argument that he's more evil because he will treat you face to face. Buffalo Bill won't even look you in the eye. He can't even stand it himself.
Because he's so broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the wild dog, whereas Hannibal Lecter is the stealthy, silent killer. He's more of an assassin.
Yeah.
Which is really awesomely insidious. See, I love evil. I'm not evil, and that's why I like it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I was so furious about those two girls today.
Oh my God, I can't believe that.
Oh. So there's an article in the newspaper, online, said that there's this whole Slender Man urban myth.
Mm-hmm.
And these two young ladies in Wisconsin who are 12 decided they were going to become his acolytes and move into his mansion, which they decided he owned and it was nearby. So they packed bags and they got ready to move into his mansion. And the way they decided they were going to prove that they were worthy of moving into his mansion was by killing a classmate. Mm-hmm. It was premeditated, cold-blooded murder. They stabbed her 19...
since February and they just recently did it.
Stabbed her 19 times and the girl lived.
Yeah.
Thank God.
It was like an inch away from fatally killing her on some of the stab wounds.
Yeah, so not only did they do that wrong,
uh-huh.
not only did they not research whether or not Slender Man was a real thing, they just took it at face value and they're idiots. Just idiots. Are you upset about the whole thing? Or just
it's just so stupid.
Oh, my God. And I was just like, you know, it was interesting because we were talking about it and I was reading that they're going to be prosecuted
as adults.
And I said, good, because that's an adult crime. And kids need to know that it is not okay to kill people.
Premeditation makes an adult crime.
Right?
Right.
Well, yeah. You know, so, and the girl didn't die. So we're not talking electric chair.
No.
You know, and I don't know what the laws in Wisconsin are anyway, but...
attempted manslaughter nonetheless. So.
Oh, right, right. Well, and it was voluntary. Like, it was attempted murder, and that's what they should be charged with. But I was just like, holy crap. How stupid. Not only did they not look this up, they were so uneducated that they decided this urban myth was true, but they decided to be disciples. So there's stupidity, there's weakness, there's no vengeance. The girl was their friend.
I thought 12-year-olds were smarter than this. Yeah, she was her friend. She was like, well, how could you do this? I trusted you. I hate you.
I trusted you.
Yeah.
And they were going to kill her in a bathroom because there was a drain for the blood to go down.
Mm.
They thought this through.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, and this is why I bring this up, is I was just talking about this over the past couple days. With villains being anti-heroes, and there being no true evil and no true good, and everything's gray, we're just misunderstood, you see. It makes goodness weak.
Mm.
Because if evil is essentially goodness in disguise, goodness becomes weak. It doesn't become solid and strong and something to aspire to. It becomes something that, well, if you're not doing, you've just fallen from. Horseshit. It is not okay to kill people. That's not okay. And that's, it just made me so angry on a visceral level. I just want to go in and whoop their asses. Yeah. And my mother actually posted on my Facebook today. She said they needed spankings. They didn't fear consequences for their actions.
No.
She said, you kids had religion and beatings. And she said, if one didn't make you scared, the other one would. And you know, there's a whole generation of kids growing up without fear. They have no fear for their consequences, and they have no stark delineation between good and evil, and they're taught in games, and I, you know, God, I make my living doing video games, but, you know, like in something like Grand Theft Auto, you get points for making drug deals, effing prostitutes, murdering people, running them over with your car, doing all this stuff. That's how you rack up points. Not that these kids play that at that age. They shouldn't. You know, so they're being put in a position of true, omnipotent evil. They can choose to play that way, which is fun to go into the imagination. But when the imagination becomes your reality and you're not suffering consequences for your actions, that is when the nastiness really begins. There's no fear. There's no respect. There's no fear at all of what might happen to them. And I think kids, and I don't know about, I mean, I sound like an old lady. Oh, you know the kids these days. But I just think that there's not enough respect for human life. And I don't think it comes from video games. I think it starts in the house. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I can't blame her parents for the choices that she made. I'm sure that there are plenty of moms of serial killers who are horrified by what their child has done and who still love their kid and they just don't even know, you know, they don't know how this happened. They had a decent upbringing. There was just something off. But what I think does need to happen is we need to really start paying more attention to mental illness in this country because it has been a black sheep for so long, and really focus on getting people healthy and figure out either, A, is there something that we're doing as a society that's making them sick? B, are we ignoring the fact that they're sick? The Santa Barbara school shootings are another complete and total example of this. And I forgot what my third point was, but but making sure the people who need help are getting it, making sure that there is respect for basic life and humanity and empathy, because somehow this empathy is gone. It's not vaccinations and Asperger's syndrome. And I'm not saying that Asperger's kids don't have a hard time. I've got a very good friend who does have Asperger's and says, I have very violent tendencies that I turn off every day because of the kindness of other people. Wow, what a strong statement. That's a choice he makes. Mm-hmm. Why? Why does he make that choice? And these other people made the other choice, that this fake internet thing, A, how did it become real? And B, how did they decide that they were going to do this with no compunction?
Yeah,
about they're murdering a friend.
Well, that has got to start in the home, because a parent, you know, if a parent doesn't take any responsibility about the upbringing of the kid, and doesn't want to take any stance on good or evil or or even religion to a degree, you know, it's almost like you have to have a code of ethics. You have to instill in a child a viable code of ethics that says, you know, this is good and this is bad. And not necessarily you'll go to heaven if you're good, you'll go to hell if you're bad. It's just this is the way that people in a society behave. And if you violate the rules of society, the first person who's going to jump down your throat is going to be me. And I'm going to tell you that there is going to be repercussions coming from me for not behaving yourself.
Not being a decent person.
But there's so much
I'm not saying that they have to be a sheep and they can't thwart the system, but basic human rights like to live.
Mm-hmm. But there have been so many parents lately who've said, like, you know, screw the world, I'm out for myself, you know, and my kid, you know, and they treat their kids like little pals, you know, and then when the kid gets, it's like parents raising chimps. The chimp is fine until it becomes active on its own, and then it becomes a threat. And then, you know, the kid gets kicked out of the house or whatever. And it's like you need a moral barometer, and that has to be enforced in schools. And, you know, all my siblings are teachers, you know, to some degree or another, and they all run into this. It's like they'll see kid after kid coming in with no moral barometer, and the parent, when they're called upon, like, what's your kid doing? That's the furthest thing in their mind. They're concentrating on their life, their job, what they want, and it's up to the parent, the grandparent, the, you know, somebody else to raise the kid and instill in that kid a moral, you know, handle the kid, because I'm busy with my own shit. And so an educator, even another parent can only do so much in light of that, and then you've got kids growing up who truly do not care about anything other than their immediate wants. And I read that the Santa Barbara kids, his 140-page manifesto or whatever it was, and it was both laughable and chilling. It was somebody who was, from this elitist point of view, I guess his parents were fairly well off and his father was involved in show business, but I got the idea that the parents didn't spend any time with him in any sort of real spiritual way. I mean, he certainly was given gifts and everything. His parents split up and he spent some time with one parent or another, and he got, you know, the latest video games, and he lived in World of Warcraft and everything. And he imagined sex as a sort of, and having a girlfriend as this idyllic thing that he was barred from, like the fate had barred from. No, he barred himself from it himself, because he was, when all was said and done, he was a shy, kind of insecure little guy who And that's what people respond to. When they respond to confidence, they respond to somebody who believes in themselves. And this was someone who was desperate to be accepted by the cool kids and desperate to have people, you know, accept him for who he is, but not a very giving kid. And so he went nuts and did this horrible thing. And it's, you know, it's sad, but...
Well, I'll tell you what the saddest part about it is the fact that, going back to the Slender Man girls, they didn't have anybody in their life if they were that afraid of him. And I don't think they were afraid. I think they were interested in being acolytes of. Mm-hmm. You know, so they were undereducated and just genuinely stupid. They didn't have a grown-up in their life that they could turn to. And the same is true for this kid.
Yeah.
You know, they're misunderstood. I'm not even going to say they're misunderstood because I've been carrying on about that word since we started. But there's something wrong and they can't get the help they need. And so they can't get the information they need. They can't get the help they need. They can't get the perspective they need. And that's where I think society is broken. And that's where I think a lot of this stuff is coming from, is for whatever reason, there's a lack of kindness. Because kindness can change somebody's day. And so the one thing that Paul and I have both decided to do is if there's a door to be held open, we do it. Mm-hmm. Young, old, I don't care if someone has their hands full or if they don't. Mm-hmm. I'll step back and open the door on purpose because you don't know what it took for them to get there. They might have been stuck in traffic. Their car might have gotten dinged. Their dog might have passed away. Hey, who knows? But mm-hmm. a little bit of a gesture can change somebody's day. And so what we decided to do in response to this stuff that's going on is be a good ear, and or at least try to be, specifically to people we don't, you know, we might not know that might be reaching out for some reason. And just try to be a force for good. Mm-hmm. And make sure that we're kind in every way we can, both to strangers and to people that we know, because if you don't, you might be missing an opportunity to turn somebody's life around. And if we all make that choice, then maybe, and I don't know, but maybe some differences will happen. But until we're all invested and we all have more empathy, both for the mentally ill and for the fact that this is going on, you know, for the families and for the, I mean, just, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be under fire as a parent of one of these kids who's committing these atrocious acts. They've lost their child as well. I mean, those 12-year-old girls' parents are going to have to watch them grow up in jail. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to be dead before those girls are out.
Yeah, it's 60 years is the right, you know, estimated time for that.
They got their children with mm-hmm. one mistake. It's a big one. Mm. But one mistake. You know, I mean, this isn't breaking a neighbor's window. This is killing a person. And these girls had no idea, I'm guessing, that they were going to get in trouble. They thought they were going to run off, and they did not think that they were going to have to own up for what they did. So I hope that this is an example for other kids.
Yeah.
This is not okay. And it is not all right. And I immediately go into Punisher mode and I'm like, let's paddle their asses on public TV. Let's do this. It's over. You know, like these are not, I don't want to see them get martyred. I don't want to see them get leniency. I think that it's really important that kids see that if you do this, your life is done. This is not an oops that is okay. And we do not excuse it. So we'll see what the Wisconsin courts do. But mm-hmm. I wrote on my Twitter today and I was like, oh, should I take that down? It's pretty harsh. And I thought, no, I really feel that way. I think these kids should be tried as adults. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like they're definitely going to go for an insanity plea because one of the girls said, I do not feel remorse.
Well,
it's weird I didn't feel remorse.
The other girl, from what I understood, said that they kept going back and forth like, I don't want this person die, but I want to go meet Slender Man and all this or whatever that is all about. Yeah.
That's like Charlie Manson level bullshit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that is genuine hysteria.
I mean, one of the things that we've lost in our society, and it was a good ally of righteousness, was shame.
Yeah.
You know, the shame.
Reality TV took a lot of that away.
Yeah, there is no shame now. If fame trumps shame. You know, if you can be famous or notorious, you don't have to feel shame for it. You know, it's like I killed a guy and I went to jail. Now I'm out. Now I'm a host on a reality show. You know, there are a lot of rewards for something like that. And you can't demonize anybody for killing somebody. You know, you just have to, you know, kind of hide your head and say, oh, that's unfortunate. And I hope the family heals. You know, it's like there is no punishment for this. And I'm not sure capital punishment is... is the answer, but it's almost like society is saying to people who commit crime, okay, you'll be punished, but, you know, there's no shame on you anymore. What you've done is a damnable thing, is a despicable thing. I mean, it comes out, I guess, in the courtroom as the judge is yelling at the person if they've been caught. But, you know, it's, like I said, it comes down to sloppy values and bad parenting more than anything. No structure and no thought for anybody else. I think that when I see a person, a parent, speeding around in the car, yakking away on their cell phone, flipping people off and doing whatever the hell they want in the car, and I see there's a kid in the back seat, that kid's already lost, you know? Mm-hmm. Because the parent is not behaving in a way that would fit in with society. It's just like, it's like me, 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 I want, I want, I want, and the kid is going to come up an even worse version of that. You know, it's all about the gratification and screw society. I don't care. Society doesn't do anything for me. I want what I want right at this moment. Mm-hmm. And if that means throwing a fit, or if that means getting a gun, and that means blowing away people who stand in my way, you know, what's the problem with that? I'm getting what I want. And, you know, now it's almost like, you know, what's most horrible is like the shooting has become the statement, you know, for somebody who's dissatisfied to walk into a situation where they feel they've been wronged, blow people away, and then just take their own life. That was the thing. In the Santa Barbara shooter, I'm not going to suffer and be brought to justice. I'm not going to jail. I won't, you know. He was somebody who believed he was an elitist, saw himself as a god, saw himself as this blessed figure. And you know what? We've all done the lonely at some point. We all have, you know, pined for
somebody. That kid needed a lot of help.
But that kid needed nonstop psychotherapy. He was clearly smart.
That guy, narcissistic, lots of mental illnesses, that guy needed help he did not get. And his parents called the police and said, we think our son, from what I understand, and I wasn't there and I don't know, but from what I understand, his parents called the police and said, we think our son might be dangerous, and he hadn't broken any laws. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing he could do. So what can we change? If not, the, you know, like, okay, so if there's nothing the police can do because their job is to uphold the law and there is no law against saying weird things. We have a First Amendment for that. You're allowed to say weird things.
You can commit them or you can send
and
them
I
to
don't,
go
right,
see
and I
somebody.
Don't, and I don't want the First Amendment changed so that it's censorship. Mm-hmm. I want us to be able to say weird things. So my question then becomes, what do we do? If there's a dude walking up and down the street pointing at one house and saying, that one, I'm going to kill everybody in that house.
Well, that he's threatened them at that point.
But this kid was threatening people on YouTube, not by name, though. And so there was no
saying
specific
that
crime.
That he would kill them?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was saying, I'm going to kill every blonde girl I see and all this other stuff. And he was very serious and he was very meticulous. I'm talking about the Santa Barbara guy.
Yeah.
So my question then says, it becomes, should we create a brigade for the mentally ill? And so if there's a homeless guy who's got his belt off and he's snapping it in people's faces, and we don't like that, you know, like maybe a team of psychologists pulls up in a van and goes, hey.
With a big net.
Right, right. The crazy catchers. Maybe. And we take them in like we rescue dogs and we get them some help and we try to get them back on their feet. I have no idea where to start. Because I have no idea what the actual need is, how to assess it, and I certainly don't know how to solve those problems, but it's becoming more and more obvious that it's time.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the flip side, there was a young boy who was making fun of another boy who brought in a Barbie for show and tell, mm-hmm. and organized all the friends to make fun of him. He felt so bad, even after apologizing, he organized an anti-bullying club at school, and it's the most attended club in the school.
Okay.
And this was a kid who had been a bully?
Yep.
Well, that's good.
He felt so bad about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it that made him feel bad?
He just was sad the way he made the kid feel. He didn't.
Right, but what you don't know what prompted his change of heart? Was it a whooping?
Well, from what I understand, that they made him make an apology, yes, but he also didn't expect the kid to start breaking out and crying
over
it. And that's
so
all
he
I
saw the consequences
yeah.
of his actions
yes.
happen
yes.
and said, oh shit, that sucks.
And then he still didn't feel better even after having been made do that.
He still felt a guilt debt.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but the consequences of his actions were obvious. Yeah. They were right in front of him. They happened instantaneously because the kid had a vulnerable, honest reaction. that we all feel inside when we're bullied, but he just let it out, and the kid went, whoa, whoa. It's fun to tease. It's not fun to make somebody hurt. Mm-hmm. So that kid was good inside. You know, so, and probably not mentally ill, because that's an empathetic human response to human pain. But when someone is genuinely mentally ill and lacks that empathy, or a sociopath who creates chaos on purpose because it's fun, or because they don't know who they are and they're sort of this chameleon and they just sort of go in and out of, they don't have a true identity. Mm-hmm. How do you get them help? Because they don't have that capacity to feel bad. Mm. It doesn't exist. So how do, you know, I mean, aside from putting them in a mental institution and letting doctors experiment on their noodles like we used to, what do we do with those people? That's the question that I'm asking. And that's what I would like to see. You know, I mean, that's kind of where my focus is with this huge rash of shootings and stabbings. And part of it is also the fact that technology has made these stories available to us. Because Upworthy is a very valid way to spend your time. And it is not the crap that we see on television, which is doom and gloom and terrifying and scandalous and, you know, and all this stuff. It's something like Upworthy. You can watch a young man who organized this wonderful thing for a waitress at his restaurant that, you know, like the good in the world. You can focus on that, and that's important too. So finding that balance. So technology has brought us closer, and now we're hearing about these things in Wisconsin, which might have been an urban legend 30 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, unless it made national news. And something like that would have technically been a local interest story. But now, whoop, it's around the world in a couple hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, Jesus, America's crazy. Well, not all Americans are crazy. Some are really cool. You guys are cool. You probably don't kill people. Don't, if you don't, you know.
Okay, I'll okay, I'm good.
Yeah, okay, good. Don't, please don't kill people. And that's also my other thing, is just please don't kill people. Don't.
Yeah, it's not, it's not great.
So, all right, well.
So that's our I guess, our big discussion on evil.
Yeah,
let's go. And villainy.
Yeah. Do we have a wedding podcast?
We had one.
A jukebox,
yeah.
Can we replay that the week of your wedding?
Of course.
Let's do that.
Okay.
So we'll replay that, and we'll do this one, and then you're off for 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
All right.
Okay.
Happy wedding to you guys.
Thank you.
Yes.
Looking forward to being there.
There won't be any evil at our wedding.
We'll see.
Oh, true.
yes, there will. You know, and that's the other thing that, you know, and I'm sorry, we're saying goodbye, and here I go. But they're vilifying the parents, and I'm not saying it's not their fault, because I don't know. But they're saying, oh, well, you know, the parents posted these images of skulls on their Twitter 2 years ago, and they, and the mom collects these little stuffed animals that are skull faces. And I'm thinking, you know what? You should take a look at my effing cupboard, but I ain't killing nobody. And I ain't saying it's okay. No. And if there's a child in this house, and they even look at my dog sideways, they get it. Because we do not harm living things in this house. And you're surrounded by dead stuff, but we didn't kill it. You know, and we're careful about where it comes from. That's moral fiber. So I'm not saying that the parents did or didn't instill these values. It might have been a failing of the parents. It might have been mental illness on the part of the child. I don't know. But what I am saying is, having skulls around does not make you a murderer. Because I got real human leg bones in my garage that I did not kill and eat the dude they came from. Stupid. That's ignorant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ignorant.
And not ignorant. Tasty.
Yeah, not good. From what I understand, who was that guy that cooked and ate his own hip?
I have no idea.
You didn't hear about this?
No.
We were talking about this at a session the other day. The Tex and I we got done early, so we played Cards Against Humanity and told each other grisly stories. And this guy said that there was a dude who had something was wrong with his leg, and he had to have his hip replaced. Mm-hmm. And they cut out a large section of his body because of the way that the hip had to be done. And he wanted the bone, and so he had to boil the meat off the bone. And he decided to try himself. And he said he was pretty good. He said that he tasted like wild... It wasn't wild pig. It was wild...
It wasn't chicken.
Thing. It wasn't... No, it wasn't chicken. It was like wild deer or wild
venison
something.
Or
it wasn't
venison.
It was... I want to say it was like in Australia. So it was either Australia or...
Kangaroo?
No. You can
wild
look it
sheep.
Up. Just look it up.
Puma?
Yeah, I don't know. Just look it up. But the dude ate his own leg.
Yeah.
And I said to the guy, I said, you know, there's flesh-eating beetles for that. And he goes, yeah, but once you fed them once, then what do you do with them? And I said, oh, good point. And he said, so we boil our bones. And I said, oh, God, You know, this is what happens. You make video games, you talk about eating yourself.
I wonder if you could liposuction off your fat, take the fat home, and then fry donuts and eat the donuts.
Different kind of fat.
It has to be rendered like or processed in a certain way, like lard or something.
Well, that's more. Yeah, I think that when they fry donuts, it's more in oil anyway.
Oh, it is.
Isn't it?
I don't know. I saw footage last night of them cutting out human fat. And they took like what looked like a wire to and they stuck it in it.
Cannula.
Yeah, and they melted it, and so they melted it down to a liquid.
Yeah.
So I prompted like, could you get that and could you fry donuts in it? And
well, why don't you ask a doctor?
I don't think for some reason I don't think it would end well, and I don't think it would taste good.
I don't think it would taste good.
No.
You know, because we eat so many toxins and gross stuff.
We're not high on the predators list. That's why you. That's why usually pumas and tigers attack us only when they're sick and there's nothing else.
Right.
Because we taste like crap.
Right. Probably literally.
Well, yeah. So I've been led to understand by various predators I've spoken to on the matter.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Well, have a lovely couple of weeks, everybody. Don't eat your own hip bones and don't kill people.
Yes.
That's our big lesson of the day. This is a weird one.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be the title. This is a weird one.
It's ending on an odd note.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any good jokes.
If you're looking for a great story, and this has been too weird for you, you want a great story, there's Black Canary in the Sale.
Yes.
Bloodspell.
Yes.
Bloodspell.
Which is a terrific story. So
Fat Donut, Bloodspell.
No, very little blood in the thing.
Okay.
Very little blood. So anyway. So long.
Yeah, I love everybody. Weird.
Skittles.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.